It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Talking to our special guest this hour. This is kind of a shift in eras. I just want to make sure you understand how important this is to me. And as an example of a lot of the interviews that we do, it's been building up to a lot of this. And what is it? Tom Jenny, let me give you a little bit of bio here and you'll understand, you know, why this is something you should be listening to. Tom Jenny, the future of Arizona Economic Discussion Group, politics, elections, that's what we're going to be talking about. There's an economic discussion group in Arizona, a lot of the movers and shakers and politicos and senior fellows of and judges and doctors and lawyers and stuff and politicos. There's been a lot of that over the decades. It's been in existence, 40 years or something. Now, Tom Jenny is, I always thought of him as the young man, the kid. Hell, they thought I was a kid till I was 40. So, you know, but he's got that Dick Clark looking young thing going on. So he'll be that for a while. But, you're probably what, in your 40s, Tom? 53, you youngin'. I don't know, you're looking good, though. All right. So Tom Jenny lives in Phoenix. He was born in Tucson, graduated high school there. He got an associate's degree, New Mexico Military Institute, and a bachelor's degree in Spanish and Latin American studies from Georgetown University. In Washington, D.C. and Phoenix, Jenny has worked as a think tanker, fundraiser, grassroots organizer, and lobbyist. He has taught government, economics, and Spanish to high schoolers. He has served as a bookkeeper and treasurer for several nonprofit organizations. He has served as a deacon and elder for his church. He is happily married and is the adoring father of two children. In his free time, he backpacks, goes bouldering, shoots a lot of sports clay targets, et cetera, et cetera. This is how I know him. The difference, you know, that we have, oh, okay, I didn't have his mic on. We'll go ahead and we'll go. I apologize. I didn't have Mike's, Tom.
I didn't say anything.
No. You said something, Donna. Just listen to the stream and let me know. So we're good. Now, what I know Tom Jenny from is in the mid-90s or so, he came from D.C., I think, to Washington. I mean, back to Arizona. And you were working with the Goldwater Institute after a stint with the Cato Institute. And he's done a lot of political activism and really organizing. And what has been his, I don't know, what is your claim to fame, Tom? You're always in the middle of Arizona politics or politics in general to forward agendas that, you know, jibe with your philosophy. Before we get into a lot of the details of what's coming, us coming back, what you're doing, your new endeavor now, what has been your life's work? What is it that you think is important?
Well, it's kind of fun. I've now made it into a couple of history books. There was a left-wing history written a couple of years ago about the history of the Tea Party. And so a lot of people see me as the father of the Arizona Tea Party because I organized the big one at the state capitol on April 15th, 2009. And we had about 10,000 people.
Right. Oh, I'm sorry, Tom, you just cut out there for a second. I remember that, you know, I spoke at it, and it was, you know, during and after the Ron Paul Love it.
And it's available on Amazon. You just look up Tom Jenny American Futures. So
okay,
I
wait,
make
wait,
sure
wait.
I plug,
you cut
plug
out
that
there.
Thing.
You cut out for a second there. Go ahead and promote your book again. You know.
Okay. So I wrote. I spent 2 years writing a gigantic book. So it's right there on the shelf. It's called The American Futures Story Collection. There's 60 stories in there. We talked about that on this show a few weeks ago, but I published that this year. But
yeah, it was very interesting. You know, you have you give the arguments of different sides. You know, explain how the book actually works and what you did, would you? Can you hear me now?
I can.
You know, go ahead and explain how the book works. I thought it was very interesting how you provided the arguments from different political perspectives. You know, talk about that.
So basically in the book, you, the reader, the second, it's told in second person, you, the reader, are abducted by aliens in about the year 2024 when you're 24 years old. And they give you a choice, extraterrestrial aliens. They give you a choice of 14 different political ideologies. And whatever you choose, the aliens push America very hard in that direction, in the direction of that political ideology. So you can choose anything from, you can keep current American centrism. You can go out. There's several flavors of left. There's several flavors of right. There's three flavors of libertarian. And you can whatever you choose, the aliens are going to push America very hard for a decade in that direction. And then after that, you get to a landing page. It's sort of a choose your own adventure book. And then at the end of that first decade segment, you get to a landing page where you ideally choose randomly. You pull out your D&D dice or you get a random number generator. And the book will then send you to one of three, four, five, six different story endings. And you choose one of them and you find out how America performs and what happens in your personal over the next 6 years. So it's a 75-year experiment. It goes out to the year 2100. And so it's an exploration of what if you got your way, what if you, your favorite ideology, how are things going to turn out? And of course it's a bit probabilistic. There are several outcomes. You choose them randomly, ideally, and then you go where it goes. Sometimes your favorite system works out, sometimes it doesn't. And then there's a lot about who your character is and how you, why you chose that ideology. And so it becomes.
What was your purpose for doing that way? I mean, I found it fascinating. It's very interesting. But why? Because you have a lot of experience in political philosophy and real politics, you know, as it gets down to elections and policy and legislation and all that kind of stuff. You chose to do this as what? To express what you had learned? Why?
I really love ideas. I really love exploring ideas. I love the idea that I may not be completely right about everything. I like the idea that there's something right, or there's a kernel of truth in almost every political ideology you can think of. There's something there that attracts people to that ideology. And I really wanted to explore it. I wanted to find out, okay, let's go with that. How would things turn out? But of course, one thing I don't do in the book is I don't suspend the basic laws of economics, and I don't suspend the basic laws of human nature, except for that first decade where the aliens basically get minds and convince an overwhelming majority of the American public to think exactly like you do. But then after that first decade, we have them, the aliens take the hands off, take the fingers off the scale, and they let human nature and, of course, the basic laws of economics reassert themselves.
Now, is this something that you came up with, you know, with AI in mind? Because I'm getting the feeling that, man, this is going to happen. I mean, it's happening now. And they will just shift between one ideology of another to eventually get people to want whatever the hell it is in the end they, them, those want anyway. So was AI in your mind on this?
AI was to some extent in my mind, but ChatGPT-4 came out after after I finished the book. So by the way, that would make it a lot easier to write more stories, because I could have ChatGPT read my book, in a minute, and then I could tell him, hey, I want to explore the story. I want to have a story going this way with this ideology. Write it in the style of Tom Jenny.
Oh, hell yeah. Let me know what happens. Yeah. I know you're going to do it. Do it.
I may try that. I really love writing, so I did not I haven't done that. I'm working on a new story, but I am using a Leonardo program, an AI illustrator, to provide a lot more stories, because I actually illustrated that book, put about 80 illustrations in it, and that was hard work. It's not my comparative advantage. So I like drawing, but not as much as I like writing. So when I write this next story, and I'm going to put it out there on the web for free, and you know, the first taste is free, and then after that, you know, you got to pay. With that story, I'm already inserting a bunch of illustrations that have been generated by AI.
Okay, let's go ahead and talk about, we did your infomercial for your book, which is an awesome idea. You know, I want to make sure that got out. But the one thing that I really wanted to make sure we talked about is your experiences. And can you tilt your camera down just a little bit, a little less headroom, because the way I got it framed here. Yeah, thank you.
A little better.
Yeah, no, that's great. Your philosophy, having this experience, you going through these experiences on local, national, international, a lot of different subjects, where the money comes from, where the power is. I mean, you're one of the few people that I know and tolerate at the same time that knows how it really works. And the one thing I tell the audience, as much as Tom Jenny, is an advocate for his clients or whatever he was doing or passionate about or whatever, you know, whenever I meet these people in politics and you're talking about whatever, they're always on stage and they lie to me. I never felt that Tom lied to me. He would always, shoot straight and say, this is what, so I, in politics, people, especially politicians, I just, get this off of me. I got to take a bath. I can't stand it. You know, well, Tom was always upfront with me, accurate, in fact, I was one of the speakers at your first Tea Party thing at the state capitol in 2009. And my first thing out, I go, I'm not with any of these guys. I just want to make sure everybody knows I'm not with any of these guys. And it was very interesting, how this all has happened right before our eyes. And it's rare that you have someone in your position that experienced it maybe a little bit more of a libertarian perspective than a lot of other people involved directly in politics. As we've progressed, all this stuff has happened. I want to get your perspective on what's really going on. Monologue me, man. Tell me, as you're becoming an adult with children, your children are how old now? They're almost like teenagers or something, aren't they?
Yeah, one of them's a teenager. So they're getting there. It's a lot of fun. So I was going to say something, Ernie. One of the reasons that I was able to stay close or really on libertarian, I'm a libertarian, and we can talk about exactly what kind. But one of the reasons I was able to stay that way and get up on a stage and not have to BS and not have to say something untrue was that I was working for the Koch brothers, and the Koch brothers are libertarians. Now they're they tend to be centralist libertarians, DC beltway types, a lot of folks in that organization. But they're true believers. And for instance, back in 2010, we were playing around a lot in some congressional races here in Arizona. And our consultant published huge boxes full of door hangers that said, basically, they didn't say exactly keep government out of my Medicare, but they were pretty close, and talking about how the people we were working against, the people we're educating against, how these politicians were going to destroy Medicare. And what was really great was Charles Koch and David Koch said, hold on, what are you talking about? We're not defenders of the current Medicare program. The current Medicare program is the biggest bankrupt. It's the biggest bankrupt program in the world. It's far and away the biggest organization in the world that's under, you know, that's drowning in red ink. It's absolutely bankrupt. It's bankrupt to the tune of $80 trillion over the next 75 years. It's absolutely unfundable. Everybody who tells you that they paid for it, oh, I paid for it, you know, I should get it. It's absolutely not true. You pay very, very little for the average person pays very little out of their payroll for Medicare. And it's a gigantic program that promises the moon to everybody. That was one of the great things about working for AFP was the people at the top were principled.
Americans for Prosperity, right?
That's right.
This is my critique of my, you know, political experience with all things Koch brothers. It has come down to this. I'm going to make this statement, and of all the good that comes out of it and a lot of the activism and everything, you know, there's one theme that I see, and I want you to comment on it. No matter what the issues are, it is to, you know, bring together opposition against some candidate for whatever reason. You know, they're not anti-war enough. They're not freedom economic enough. They're this, that. So a lot of things that ring true with libertarians. But it seems that the focus, the underlying motivation for all of that was to make sure they got their energy policy that they wanted. As soon as they get, you know, commitment from a candidate that they would oppose in, you know, Montana senator, congressman, whatever, that was against pipelines or whatever, we're going to go after them on anti-war, or we're going to go after them on, you know, freedom of, you know, water occupied land, whatever it is, that as soon as they agree, or as soon as they get, you know, they're kingmakers, and that their real focus, this, a lot of these freedom oriented issues are subservient to their energy policies, because that's, you know, what they, bread and butter. So that was my observation, and kind of gave me a bad taste that you couldn't count on them not sacrificing something that they came out were really adamant about, but then they got what they wanted and it kind of went away and you wait for the next election cycle. So am I off on that, or is that part of it? And you would know, so help me out.
Yeah, I think you're off on that. That whole Koch network is remarkably principled. And, you know, and I don't work for them anymore, so I don't have to toot their horn. But I will say their lobbying shop in Washington was absolutely against every single subsidy, including subsidies that help them. You know, so they just consistently would say no. They'd say, no, we don't want this. You know, we don't want your subsidy for fossil fuels. We don't want your subsidy for pipelines. We don't want your subsidies, period. And I think they're almost alone in Washington in being a very principled group. At least certainly libertarian principles. There's a lot of principled leftists out there who want to, you know, bring about the dictatorship of the communist proletariat or something. And, you know, they're working out of closets and, you know, somewhere in the Beltway, and, but they don't have much traction. But these guys, yeah. So, and the big thing the Kochs did for about 10 years was to get involved in congressional education, educating people about what was going on in Congress, and obviously trying to create a climate where people who are heavily statist in borderline districts were likely to get voted out and be replaced by people who are a little bit more friendly to markets. So ideally, a lot more friendly to markets, but that doesn't happen very often, as you understand. Yeah. So they ended up playing in a lot of these congressional races, and they got involved with that. Now they've actually taken a step back from that whole thing quite a bit. They're playing more in primaries now, usually Republican primaries. They're playing a lot more in primary races now, which is something that they didn't do when I was there. That was kind of a nice thing, was because I'm hanging out with a lot of Republicans and going to Republican groups and digging for trying to build our grassroots army out of people within the Republican Party who care about markets. And so one of the great things the whole time I was there was we could tell people, hey, we're not involved in primaries. You know, we're not picking, you know, because those are some of the ugliest and nastiest fights within the Republican Party. So we'd be saying, hey, we're out there making sure that people know you know, you've got an incumbent Democrat and this person's voting for all kinds of bad stuff, and we're going to make sure people know that. And so that was a great thing for me personally, because I didn't want to I didn't want to upset, you know, our base by getting involved in a nasty three-way primary fight somewhere. So that was a good thing.
Well, now we're looking at, you know, some fundamental America crap is freaking happening. And I'm wondering what this freedom-oriented take advantage of the libertarian word being slung by freaking everybody now. You know, you and I remember liberal what? I mean, you know, now it's like there's no politician yet that doesn't know how to spell libertarian. But the I'm looking for some real freedom for the individual as far as it comes to land ownership. When we come back, that's going to be my focus. All Ernie activism of all the stuff that I'm going to be kind of laser focused on this. You'll own nothing and here's your happy shot kind of crap. I'm going, no, 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 no. Here we go. Now, there was an effort that you were associated with at the Goldwater Institute, and one of the guys, Nick Dranius, there was really pushing this prosperity zone thing that I paid a lot of attention to. And this is, God, decade and a half ago or more, that kept coming back, trying to provide like a square mile out in the middle of a freaking desert, which is like Ernie's little bitty patch out in the middle of the freaking desert, 20 acres of leave me aloneism. And that's what they were trying to accomplish. Look, you're not getting any tax revenue on this place anyway. You're out in the middle of the, now what do you care? You know, just have a freedom out in the middle of the desert zone of we did solar and rainwater and suck it. And the machine was like, oh, hell no. You're so freaking not allowed, you know. So I'm wondering where that went. How is it now? Is it getting, it's getting worse. You'll own nothing kind of thing. And is Arizona going to ever free up land? Is that because I tell you right now, tell all your friends, here comes Ernie. Okay. I had Clint Bullock on, you know, just last year and said he's a Supreme Court justice in Arizona and friends, you know, we've known him since whatever. And I said, Clint, just saying, man, it's going to be on your desk. Here we come, you know. So I just want to know what the landscape is on those kinds of land, freedom, own it, government out of the way. I don't need no stinking permit, whatever. You know, this is what Nick was really pushing on, and I wanted to know what happened to that.
All right. Were you going to take a break, or did you want me to talk?
Go. Go, man.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't know if you were taking a commercial break or something. Yeah, so that, if you know, Nick is still involved with an outfit that is creating an enterprise zone, a prosperity zone, on the island of Roatan out off of the off the north coast of Honduras. And so he's still working on that whole idea. And it's a big idea around the world, is the idea that you ought to create these charter cities, which are allowed to cut through the red tape. They're allowed to have great legal systems, and they're allowed to give people a chance to set up shop and thrive. And that's going around the world. And it happens in some countries because people will set up an enclave because they realize, hey, you know, our country's really, the smart people realize, wow, we're taxing and regulating people to death. And so some countries will try to set up these zones on their own. And there have been many countries over the years that have like a special free trade zone, a tariff-free zone. Chile did that. They already had pretty low tariffs since the 70s, but they set up some zones at the north end and south end of the country. And so you can, you know, as long as you stay in that zone, you can buy a car, you know, without any kind of tax, and you can buy whatever, electronics, all kinds of stuff. So people do pretty well in those zones. So this is an idea that a lot of people have had. It usually comes out of people looking at Hong Kong. So Hong Kong, since after World War II, was an amazing place because it wasn't controlled by China. It wasn't controlled. It was technically controlled by Britain. But the governor of Hong Kong at the time said, hey, I want to just create a free trade entrepot. I want to create a free trade enclave here and let's see what happens. And it went from being basically a swampy place with extremely poor people to being wealthier than the United States in per capita GDP. So, and now, of course, it's been taken over again by China in the last 15 years. And in the last 10 years, it's been really rough. because China is turning inward and they're locking down all over that country. They're locking down against free trade and against free enterprise. And unfortunately, and of course, all the political freedoms. And so, so it's a very sad story what's happened to Hong Kong in the last 10, 15 years.
Well, I'm looking even further down to the individual land out in the middle of the desert of leave me alone-ism. I mean, I'm not in a municipal corporation. I'm not. In fact, Cochise County, is one of the counties. I've been traveling. I'm in Missouri now. They have no building codes or permit or any of that crap out there. I mean, this county is, Greg Tivenin, he's a good friend of, ours, and has gone to the discussion group, several times. And he built his straw bale home with nothing. Just went out and just did it. Done. Now, in Arizona, in Cochise County in southeastern Arizona, they have what they call an opt-out. You have to get a permit so you don't need any more permits. I think that's kind of weird. But, they...
It's better than nothing, right?
It's better than nothing. But, I mean, they have it in Arizona. So am I going to do a 14th Amendment violation? Hey, how come they get... you don't have equal rights applied to everybody. They get to be free from the bureaucracy. And what about me? Then they go, well, nobody's free. So, their problem solved. But the... I'm looking for, because I can see this is the trend where it's going, and I don't want to leave this fight to my grandchildren, because I know that the opportunities are going to be less and less and less, which is what motivated me for my children to do all the stuff that we did. And now I can see we may have brought attention to it or maybe even slowed it down a little bit, but yeah, we're not stopping this. Describe to us what you think is the goal on an international scale and the target of the middle class in America, or is there a problem? It's just a blip. There's no big issue. We'll come out fine. We'll do our, or is there, as they say, an existential threat on the freedoms of Americans, So describe for me now what you think the biggest threat is for Americans and certainly Arizonans, because I'm going to be focusing on Arizona. Don't give a crap about anything else. Arizona, Maricopa, where my wife Donna and I we're an hour away from kids' soccer games. I mean, here we go. Why Arizona? Because that's where my grandkids and family are. That's why. So here I come, digging in my heels. What are we up against, Tom?
I think the biggest threat is central bank digital currencies. And that for me is like the real mark of the beast kind of stuff, where eventually the folks in government and the folks in big corporations and the big banking sector, they want everybody to have to register, and they want to be able to keep track of every single transaction you make. And they don't, for years and years, they've been trying to get us to what they call a cashless society. They don't like the idea that you can walk into a store with a green piece of paper, and maybe there's a camera off in the corner or something like that, but you're wearing your hoodie, and they don't like the idea that you can walk up and pay for something and walk out of the store with it without any record. This drives the statists nuts. And then there's always, they always have economic rationales where they say, we'll be able to conquer the business cycle. We'll be able to fine tune things and blah, blah, blah. But for me, that's really the biggest threat that we face. And I will say, one of the things I like about your approach is that you've mentioned LAN over and over. And I think there's something great about that, Ernie. And you're not necessarily like a lot of the people in the free market movement. A lot of folks in the free market movement think crypto's the great salvation, and that everybody's going to be able to have cryptocurrencies and trade, and that'll solve the problem of the cashless society problem. But the one big problem is what happens when solar flare hits and the internet goes down. Now you're stuck. You can't buy anything. You can't sell anything. And furthermore, we like to think of the internet as this big free space, but it's something that with some work, especially you just look at China, it's a place where a big enough government with enough power can lock the whole thing down. And so that for me is the biggest concern. And I feel like a lot of people in the techno-libertarian world are too focused on say crypto as the salvation, that's going to save us.
Yeah,
I think the gold people are also The gold bugs are also a little, I mean, I keep gold, but, you know, I think the gold bug people are also a little bit off too. And so I'm really glad that you're focusing on the question of, how do we have a space where the government's not telling you what to do?
You know, it's inside this fence line.
A physical space.
Inside this fence line is mine, 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 this is mine, not yours, mine, 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 not yours. Okay. So it's that concept. And when they say the pursuit of happiness, you know, I'm just going, well, my pursuit is I get to build a shelter that I'm not too cold, too wet, too dry, too hot, too something, too hungry, too thirsty. Get out of my face. This is, you know, that's the hill I'm willing to, you know, defend, because I can see where this is my whole life. You've known me for a long time, and Donna and I have built up to this. You know, this is what, you know, our whole thing was, is that we were going to just leave me aloneism. You know, I'm a leave me aloneist. What are you? You freaking anarchist? I'm a leave me aloneist, whatever that is. Just leave me alone. But I don't
live and let. Yeah, live and let live.
Right. I don't see that happening. And I'd be more than happy just to, you know, be out there. We're just going to start. I'm not going to ask permission. We're going to, you know, set up things to try and protect us as much as we can. You know, maybe some sacrificial couple acres out of 20 of, you know, the test of standing of whatever the heck. But I'm not, here it comes. And I just, because I just can't not. Well, what happens is, now we're in an atmosphere of a lot of the things that you and I and a lot of other activists have been screaming was the concern, you know, like CBDCs. And I'm going, all right, well, it's here now. So now what? Well, you're becoming, I don't even know the discussion group. What is your position? Director, Grand Imperial Wizard, Poobah of all you see. I mean, what are you calling yourself? You know, describe the group for everybody, and then we'll get into what the future might be.
I like the title Suzerain. So, so the Economic Discussion Group is officially now called the Anderson Reed Group, which I think helps to explain part of where we're coming from. Yeah. As you know, and a lot of your listeners know, Leonard Reed founded the Foundation for Economic Education back in 1946, kind of in the dark days of mid-century statism. And so he created he published the Freeman magazine, and for years, and people like Ronald Reagan read that, you know, very influential magazine within the libertarian movement in the mid to late 20th century. And so Leonard Reed, and he's the author of iPencil. So we were very much inspired. The founders of this group were very much inspired by Leonard Reed's efforts to educate people about the basic principles of economics. And you know, that usually ends up being free market. So the question is, how do people become wealthy? You know, the whole world's poor. How do people become wealthy? What are the big challenges you're going to face when you start this creeping statism or this galloping statism of government intervention in the economy? So, and the big purpose of the Anderson Reed Group, which was originally didn't have that name, it was just called the Economic Supper Club, was to get influential activists and thinkers here in Arizona, all in a small room, kind of a mini Mont Pelerin society, get a bunch of people in the room and just make sure that we were educating ourselves about the basic principles of the market and about individual liberty. And very much influenced by a lot of groups that were started or patterned after Leonard Reed. And so the guy who really started that here in Arizona was named Chet Anderson. And Chet was still around when I first started coming to this group in 2002. And Chet was getting older. He finally passed away about 10, 15 years ago at about the age of 94. Chet was a great old guy. And he and Roy Miller ran this thing for years. And Roy knew him about 40 years ago. They met because Chet wrote something in the Chet wrote a letter to the editor that Roy really liked in one of the, I don't know if it was the Gazette or if it was the Republic at that time. And they got in contact. They you know, this is back before the internet. They wrote each other letters and said, yeah, hey,
Chet was a big letter guy. Together.
Yeah, I've got letters from Chet from even after the age of the internet, and Roy could do email. So Roy helped to take the thing over. And then he and David Dorn ran the group for about the last 20 years. And Roy's been sick lately. I hope he's going to bounce and come back. But Roy said, "Hey, Tom, I want you to take this thing over and make it run." And so I love the group. It's a great forum. It's a great way to network with people. And it's less about networking than it is about just tapping in with people who share a lot of the same values and who are movers and shakers in different parts of the political world. And then there's a lot of, as you said at one point, doctors and lawyers. And but it's great to get everybody together in a room, and it can be kind of a church service sometimes. But you know, our main goal is to self-educate, is to make sure that we are equipping ourselves to go out there and fight the fight for liberty.
Okay, now that's one thing. I want to talk about that. You say church service. You don't mean like a religious thing other than, you know, the choir.
It's more like a Quaker meeting. Yeah, it's more like a Quaker meeting. You know,
but I want to show we
stand up and talk as the
we have your bio over on littleburnliterary.com, and it shows you in your longer hair days, you have your laptop, Avoid Religion, Follow Jesus. Now, the thing is that it's not really a religious group, but there's a lot of, you know, atheists, anarchists, whatever, it doesn't really matter. But you are a Christian. And how does that enter into politics? Is it a shiny badge? Is it a shield? Is it, you know, an advocacy? You know, let's talk about that a second.
Well, so yeah, that's a big question. I mean, it's a fundamental underpinning of a lot of the way I think. God created people. He created them equal. You're no better than I am. I'm no better than you are. We go back to John Lilburn. You know, I have no right. I should have no power over no man's rights, and he should have none over mine. And so everybody's created equal in the eyes of the Lord, and everybody has equal value and worth. And that's, for me, is the fundament of liberty, is that we do not have the right to aggress against each other. And so that is a big fundamental underpinning for me. Yes, as you said, the group does have a lot of people from a lot of different backgrounds. And we've had, I remember one discussion, I came in and represented Protestant Christians, and we had a guy in there representing Judaism, and we had another guy in there representing Islam. But we were all free market people and talking about how our different faith backgrounds worked with the free market. And so that was a fun discussion to have.
There's enough spattering in the group of atheists too, but that the religious component really doesn't enter into it. Do you think?
Not really. You know, no, it's kind of a sideshow as things go. And every once in a while we'll have kind of an atheist Christian debate or something like that. But that's not really what it's about. It's really about educating ourselves on the basic principles of the free market, and which, as you know, is a very important thing, because we in the society are constantly having to relearn those things. And most people in the society never learn them in the first place.
The open secret is what we're going to do when we come back. Is you know, I got to give a Christmas present to Arizona because Ernie's coming back. You know, we talked with Keith Knight. You know, recently he did a show with Cenk Uygur, the Turk guy. And at the same time, almost on the same day, I was interviewing Egberto Willis, which is another progressive talk show host, author, or whatever, out of Houston. And then I started to realize what was going on. They're making effort to have interaction with libertarians. The progressive movement is starting to lose it, man. So they need to get some relevance or whatever. But they got a common theme. You better take your shot and got to get rid of your guns. I mean, they're not giving that one up, you know. So I'm just going, wow, this is amazing. So what was interesting?
Yeah, and I didn't mention Keith, but I should have. And Keith is my wingman for this whole thing, or I'm his wingman. And so he and I are working together. He's a younger guy. And very influential, and has a lot of great stuff out there. He's with Libertarian Institute right now, and he knows a lot of people, and he's going to help us get some great speakers coming in. But Keith and I, back to the progressives, Ernie, Keith and I are very interested in bringing in some people from the left. And I think what we want to do is to bring them in usually on a small single issue and not try to convince people of their whole worldview, which I think generally doesn't work very well for anybody. In fact, that's part of what I was doing in my book, was not trying to convince people of an entire worldview. I was just trying to suggest, hey, here's a few things that might go wrong with your worldview, whatever your worldview, whatever your worldview is.
Because of math.
Because of basic human nature and economics, something's going to go wrong. But I tried to keep it realistic and not beat people over the head with it. That was what I was trying to do. But one of the things we can do is bring in some, and we have in the past brought in like ACLU types. That was back when the ACLU still was a liberal organization in the sense of caring about individuals and their rights rather than lumping everybody into these groups and saying, well, you're Black, so you're this, and you're brown, so you're this, and you're white, so you're this. So we used to have ACLU types come in every once in a while and speak to the group. And that's something I'd like to get back to, is find people on the left who can come in and talk about a single topic. For instance, now this doesn't work for you, Ernie, because you're an anarchist, so polycentric legal order. But, you know, here in our society, we have a fairly monopolized, in American society, we have a fairly monopolized legal system. So everybody has to use, you know, if we're talking about criminal justice, everybody has to use the same system. And so a good question that comes up on the left is, and libertarians, is legal services, is public defenders. So you have this system, we're all forced to use it. What happens when really poor people end up forced into this system and they're innocent, or they're innocent of anything wrong? They're innocent of anything you and I would consider wrong, or they need a fair trial, regardless of what they did. And what happens when they're really poor? This system is really, really tough on poor people. There's a lot of people in jail right now, not because of the original crime that they committed, but because they failed to pay a court fee, because they failed to show up for their 15th meeting with their parole officer.
Right.
So, and in many cases, because they're poor, they just couldn't get there. And they get thrown back into society after being in prison. And, you know, so this is the kind of thing that I think we can build bridges on in criminal justice reform. And I'd love to see somebody from the left come in and make a good case, like, hey, there's desperately poor people here who are trapped in this monopoly legal system, and they have a really rough time of it. And maybe, you know, as long as we got a state, as long as we're paying tons of money to prosecutors and police and prisons and all that, maybe we ought to beef up budgets for public defenders to give people a fair shot. I'm open to
that. Is that a new pet project for you? I mean, is that, you know, something that you're passionate about? One of the things you want to advocate?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm more where you are. I'd rather see a competitive legal system where we're really focused on violations of people's rights and how to remedy that. I think a lot of this goes away. But in the meantime, we've got this big government that won't leave you alone, that won't let you live out there on your 20 acres. And they're going to bring you into court someday, and they're going to try to put you in a cage.
Yeah.
I'm sympathetic to the whole argument. As long as we got that system, and as long as we're doing the legal system the way we are, maybe public defenders ought to be more heavily subsidized.
My concern is that we've lost focus of the importance of what is important, that the proper role of government is the defense of individual rights, not how you're going to be herd managed. You know, that concept of the role of government is just gone. You know, they've beaten it out of us. They're not educating it. They're not, you know, it's like you have to go through cycles. We're definitely in the fourth turning. It's going to get interesting. So I keep preaching to the audience. I'm going, look, this is going to be a food thing. Hey, you want to know what it's going to be? It's going to be a food thing. It's not available. It's too expensive. All you got is the bugs. I mean, you know, whatever the heck winds up being, you know, it's going to be a food thing, and everybody is going to get gored by their rocks, man. I mean, here we go. So I'm just...
Yeah, or your social credit score is not good enough, Ernie, and so when you walk into a Safeway or Fry's or wherever you... Sprouts, wherever you go... you're not allowed to do business there. You're not allowed to buy anything.
I am very sensitive to the central bank digital currency thing. I see the importance of the social credit scoring and all the crap that they're going to do. But that's why we really have been adamant about setting up market, agorist.market and Black Market Fridays and being able to do your own buy. You're going to know where your own food comes from and who and how with alternative currencies and alternative vendors of parallel market of Bite Me. I mean, you know, this is the kind of thing that we're working on because we do understand it. They're going to use that to make you hungry. It's going to be a food thing. You know, you don't get access to the food because your credit card's turned off because you're not doing it right because you didn't report to the whatever and your children aren't, you know, registered with and your dog doesn't have a license. I mean, it's going to be more and more and more and more of that. So as the group, you know, meets, it's never really been a bastion of activism, just like the Arizona Breakfast Club that we've done for decades. It's just, meet, eat, retreat, and kind of, you know, you get entertained and maybe you get some information you share with your own group. And you have a lot of powerful, influential groups and individuals at the discussion group and Breakfast Club and stuff that they are expected on their own to go do stuff. And they'll come in and everybody gets to have their, oh, what did you do for your summer or over the last month or something? Well, we did this big program and this thing and this thing and this thing. And you inspire each other. But as a group, it's not really an activist center of going doing anything. Is it going to maintain that kind of flavor?
I think we're going to try to maintain roughly that flavor. What Keith and I are looking at is alternating between kind of deep education topics 1 month and then more of an activist topic the second month and then kind of alternate that way if we can. Because there is a real sense people want to get out there and do something and they want to get plugged into groups that are actually doing stuff and trying to move the needle. And so I think you have to have that activist, we're a step away from the actual activism, but to get people networking and writing checks and all that, I think is pretty important. At the same time, I do want us to get back to, hey, let's explore some real basic economics. Let's make sure that we understand the basics of these philosophies. That was driven home to me, and I won't say who, but I was having a debate online with a guy who was trying to say that the United States needed to support Ukraine because of the non-aggression principle. And
the rationale was what?
Well, what they did was they went and said, okay, Russia is the aggressor A, and Ukraine is the victim B, and according to the NAP, person C can step in and help to defend the rights of person B when they're aggressed against by person A, and that person C therefore is the United States and QED. You know, that's the end of it. So therefore, non-aggression axiom: U.S. must intervene in Ukraine.
You know, that was one thing that was very common with Ayn Rand. She was like, you know, big on, we got to go kick Russia's ass because we got to kick Russia's butt because we got to, because I don't like them. And I'm from there and I know them. We need to something. That was a common theme. And the proper role of government to me is not, first, not be the one stealing from me, you know?
Right.
First, not be the one with a gun to my head to take and redistribute to somebody else. That's first, you know?
Right. So I said, what about person D? Person D is, say, like the U.S. taxpayer or the U.S. pacifist who doesn't want to get involved. And so they're being aggressed against by person C. And what about the poor? What about the poor schmo in Russia who is conscripted? His family's held basically at gunpoint or threatened with economic destruction if the guy doesn't go out to the front lines. And he's kind of an innocent victim. And we're going to be killing him.
Yeah, you know, and the Ukraine troops that they're scooping up off the street and throwing into the meat grinder. You know,
there's a lot of innocent people in all of those categories who are being arrested against. And it was just funny because I really thought the NAP was really clear and easy to understand.
Non-aggression principle.
The non-aggression principle. And I don't want to get too much into my worldview, but I understand if people want to abandon the NAP, if people feel more utilitarian and they say, wow, the NAP is just too tough. It's too Kantian. It's too tough of a standard. The world's grayer than that. I can't handle it. You know, I understand if people do that. But what was funny was just this wholesale just misunderstanding of what the NAP is. And, you know, it's one thing to abandon it or say, yeah, I can't quite go there, but at least I know it is. And this person really didn't even know what the NAP was.
They just want what they want. You know, this is, so before you go, I wanted to make sure that I got a really good, this took this opportunity, you know, for someone that's plugged into Arizona on several levels and what we're dealing with the Arizona legislature going into, you know, 2024. And, you know, a lot of the people that you associate with, the Kochs and all that, they are definitely never Trumper kind of thing. Never Trump, never Trump. Hell no, not Trump. No, no way, Trump. Then Carrie Lake and her gubernatorial race against Secretary of State became Governor Katie Hobbs. It's, you know, freaking her and Biden are, you know, competing for, I don't know, Jackass of the Year or something. Anyway, so I'm going, this is Arizona political climate and the people when I come back that I haven't spent a moment worrying about, and I'm not going to be asking permission. I'm not going to be whatever. And I'll tell you what we're going to do as our first salvo. But you know, what are we up against? Because when we did, okay, I tell you this, in end of 19, right before all this stuff happened, we went on the road with the Love Bus for the Love Bus Liberty Tour. We had our vaccine education summit. There were 5 legislators that came. And I knew they were just shining on these activists, you know, that were all, you know, pro-freedom and no mandatory vax. So, oh, yeah, yeah, we're with you. BS. And I got from the state, I said, look, traitors first. I know what you guys are going to do. And when you do it, oh, traitors first. So then I had Clint Bullock, Supreme Court justice there. His wife was a legislator then. I think now she just got appointed to another legislative position. And she and I met. She was in my district, and she didn't want to come to the vaccine education, so she knew what was going on. She had her own. Nah, I'm not, you know, playing. You know, I know the power of pharma, that kind of thing, which I respect. You know, whatever. You know, but you know, not, at least not traitors first. I mean, you know, the other guys get to go first. So that climate, who controls? It used to be, you know, developers, you know, used car and new car dealerships. It used to be the politicos of industry, of construction, of whatever the heck. And now big tech company manufacturing has come in. We have, you know, so right now, what's the philosophy at the legislature? Now, forget this R&D crap. That don't mean nothing to me. That's all BS. But I want to know what's really in charge and how is this MAGA thing seen as an ally, a threat? You know, they need a re-education program at Hillary's School of Cool. You know what I mean? You know, what's really going on in Arizona? Help me out.
So you're kind of talking to the wrong guy because you're talking to a guy who spent 3 years basically totally unplugged from the political scene here. So I used to be able to tell you who every single legislator was, what district they represented.
Please don't.
And I used to know who to, you know, who you could call to, like.
No, I'm looking for a flavor. I'm exactly. Yeah. 3 years on vacation makes you better to talk about this. I don't want to get into all the little mumbo jumbo detail of who. Give me your general sense of the climate in Arizona.
It's very tribal on both sides, on all sides. It's very tribal these days, and that's going to be a tough nut to crack. And so I think we're about, I'm guessing 2026, maybe the Trump thing will eventually wash out. It depends how, if he actually makes it, if somehow he becomes president again, then maybe this goes out to 2028. So I think that particular piece of tribalism, But, you know, underneath all that, when you're actually down at the legislature, it's the same old stuff. It's people stealing, people trying to get in everybody else's wallet, and people trying to tell other people what to do to prop up their vision or their private interest. So if you're looking, you know, the same old stuff is going on. The people who will not leave you alone, the people who don't want you to go out there to your 20 acres, Ernie, and just live your life, those folks are there, and they're always going to be there until we have some kind of major shift in the way people think, and we get away from the statism.
You know, that's the one thing that I just, you know, give me 30 seconds, I'll tell you what we're going to do. James Corbett and I, you know, I'm sure you know who James is. James Corbett and I do a show every other week for years. And if people have watched his Federal Reserve documentary, Century of Enslavement, or the eugenics programs, or Here's Bill Gates, or the World War I conspiracy, how and why big oil conquered the world, blah, 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 blah. If they would get up to date on what the real issues are, then I'm going, you know, they would have a foundational understanding of what we're really up against. And I need to have that controversy on those kind of documentaries done as a prelude to what I'm going to be doing when legislative session starts the second Monday in January. So like we did with the Stop Wars, when they had the number 7 Star Wars came out and we had Darth Vader wearing a top hat, Stop Wars, Home Educate. Remember we did that thing. I'm going to do that again, but it's going to be towards the landing page of these documentaries. And if they, you know, I'm not going to be out front on this thing. It'll be James, a Canadian living in Japan. Go get him. Let me know how that works out. Okay. So I am going to educate the people, and it's going to be a controversial Ernieism of freaking here it comes. And that's my Christmas present, because we're going to have Christmas cards and stuff that we do, and, you know, that kind of stuff that we do. This fundamental...
By the way, Ernie, go ahead.
No, this fundamental understanding of this kind of what the issues really are, I need to be able to have a common platform of understanding, at least that they can't tell, the media can't tell everybody what we are and think and mean and what, yeah, whatever, watch the video, you know? So this is where I'm coming from, because this is my, I'm hoping my last big battle of all you had to do was leave me alone, you know, but I preemptively know they're not. So, you know, I apologize. Go ahead. And what were you going to say?
No, and in fact, I don't want to talk about this right now, but I do want to talk to you afterwards, Ernie, about an idea I've got for one of your pranks, one of your all-time classic pranks, and I think this would be a good one.
Trash can flyers!
Exactly, I love that. That was absolutely the greatest. You had the Skunk Works going on there, in that
oh,
little warehouse.
Oh, that'll be part of it. Yeah, we're gonna.
Yeah,
we can include.
I've got one for you, and I don't want to disclose it right here now, but I've got a prank that I think would be fantastic.
You know, we did that for Randy. You know, a good friend of ours there too. When they had Fountain Hills was doing, said he called. And he said, Ernie, I need to, you know, we need to do something. So I go, got you covered, man. You know, and he just paid for supplies, and then we kicked the living crap out of what, at least made him look. That's my thing. Made you look. You know, this is, yep. I'm excited about this. It's not because of anything special about anything other than it's the timing. And it's the generation next. And oh my God, you're over 50. Holy crap. I didn't even realize that. So, you know, to have the baton being passed down, you know, like it happened, you know, to me, you know, before, and we went on to do whatever. And then it's going a generation even younger than me. I was always the kid. Oh, kid, Ernie, kid, you know, until I was like 40 something, you know, and then all of a sudden, and now I understand why. You know, there's a seasoning, there's a time, there's a experience, there's a lifetime of before you get in the position that you are to really have an understanding of what's important. And how likely is it that Arizona can wrest it back from the purple blue of Arizona has been targeted for a long time? It was always Arizona. You know, Arpaio, Napolitano, you know, Brewer, I mean, you know, Hobbs, all this stuff. They've come after Arizona. You know, we have our governor, you know, worked under, you know, Napolitano was in the Clinton administration under Reno, becomes attorney general, then governor, then goes on to be head of Homeland Security. You know, gee, how did that happen? You know, now, of course, I've been screaming election fraud since forever, but there's an opportunity for Arizona to be not just Arizona, not just libertarian, but Arizona libertarian. Are you seeing an opportunity for that? And this MAGA thing, are you pro anti-MAGA, never Trump? Yeah, whatever. He has something to say. There's something behind it. The sentiment is right, but not the guy. He's too crass. I mean, give us your MAGA Trump speech.
My MAGA Trump. Ernie, very, very good speech. Very, very important. Everyone talks to me. I listen to everyone. You know, I'm a very good listener. So my feeling about the MAGA folks is that I like them in the balance. Because for decades, the people on the left have been working very hard to take over everything and tell us what to do. And the one thing I like about the MAGA folks, I like a few things, including the fact that a lot of them are my friends. The thing I like about MAGA in general is that they enter that balance, that at some point the leftists need to understand, hey, you know, you can, when you create this giant power structure in Washington and in Arizona, when you create these giant power structures for government, they're not always going to be filled with your people. They're not always going to be filled with the cosmopolitan coastal elites, you know, the people that Michael Malice calls them the cathedral. Those folks aren't always going to be pulling the levers of power. And your giant presidency that you love and you've built up to be this incredibly powerful machine, that could be taken over by someone like Donald Trump. And that ought to give you pause. And how do you like the idea of, okay, so you're controlling all the textbooks and you're controlling the school districts. How do you like the idea of having those things taken over by MAGA people? It ought to wake these people up that power is the problem. And so that's one thing I really do like. I even like the Catholic Integralists. You know, that's, you're probably familiar. It's a fringe group of Catholics who want to take over everything and go back to, you know, Sabbath laws and all kinds of stuff like that. And so this should be a big wake up to the leftists that, hey, you create these big structures. Guess what? They're going to be taken over at some point by people you don't agree with.
And they're not going to give up that power or eliminate the program. I guarantee it.
No, they're not going to walk away just because they lost an election.
This is, what I'm hoping to get from you is, what is the current state of Arizona? Are we just overrun with bureaucrats? What about the cities and the county level? Because I'm seeing my battles are probably going to be county. You know, you might need some statute to whatever, but I'm feeling this is a county thing, that they're going to be, it's like when we went with the lockdown and so on, it was some county shiny badge that showed up with a clipboard. You know, it was the counties that tell you what you can and can't do on your land. It's the counties that close your restaurant, bar, you know, retail outlet, gym, whatever. It's the counties. And we could see it in the mid-90s when they tried to do the regional government thing, you know, and they were trying to get it. You know, that was one thing, Tom. I want to mention this. It was 95, 96, around in there. I remember we had our printing press and Ganem Jewelers. You remember Ganem Jewelers there? They came in and they said, Ernie, we need you to whatever. We had our newspaper that we were doing. And we did some ads and he was a Birch guy and who are the bad legislators. We go, nope, got to put the report on all of them, not just Democrats. We're not playing that game. But the what they did is they had this, after they did Kyoto, Rio, you know, the trigger was pulled and Daddy Bush goes New World Order and we're going to, you know, use environmentalism to take over the planet kind of thing. What happened was they created this legislation that they put at the county level. There's going to be a county vote on it. And Ganem paid for Bob and I to print up tens of thousands of these flyers that showed that the group that was doing this was all one building with four addresses or whatever in Chicago. That was the Fraternal Order of police chiefs, fraternal order town managers, fraternal order city managers, and justice judges of whatever the hell, that they wanted to create a new legislative layer at the county level that had enforcement of like state statutes. We went at and it lost, like, you know, 49 point something to 50 point something, and we prevailed on that. And then when the smart city stuff came out, Patrick Wood and I were doing presentations on it from technocracy.news, and we went and I go, I remember this. This was what they had tried to do in the mid-90s. So, and then they had the little villages, like Village of Sunny Slope, Village of Arcadia, Village of kind of in Phoenix thing. So I could see the genesis of a lot of this stuff. So it's the county level. When I went to find that legislation, I had to pay a friend a couple hundred dollars. I said, it's worth a couple hundred dollars. You go find it. Because it was before the internet and everything was, you know, on internet. And the county of Maricopa had no record that they even had that election. You couldn't find the verbiage of the legislation they were trying to do. And the only way we found that was in the archives at Mesa Library. I'm going, what the crap? They were like, no, what election? We don't know what you're talking about. And I'm going, man, do you remember that election when they were trying to do regional government in the mid-90s?
No, I was in Washington. I was out in Arlington, Virginia at the
time. It's so bad. So now the smart city thing is what I'm really going to be up against, because what I represent is an opt-out from that. I mean, I'm just out. I don't want to be part of your, what? Nope, you got to be. Nope, don't want to be. So the smart city thing, now that, you know, we got the ties in with ASU and Crow and all, I mean, there's all kinds of intelligence community of whatever the hell. It's always Arizona. What are we up against on the 15-minute city World Economic Forum of you're going to be automaton in our CBDC of social economic engineering, you know, paradise of Arizona kind of thing? Where are we at on that? What feedback are you getting?
I really haven't been looking at that too well. Like I told you before, there was a time when I could tell you every single legislator and I knew a bunch of the county soups and who they were and which ones were halfway good and which ones were bad. And I've been really out of the game for a long time. So I'm hoping to get more plugged in and get back on that. Unfortunately, the state is aggressing at all levels. So we're going to have to fight it. And it's a bit of a whack-a-mole thing. And I know you're often looking for the silver bullet that's going to whack the mole once, or the silver hammer is going to whack the mole once and keep them from popping up again. But for a long time, we're going to be playing whack-a-mole. And, you know, it pops up at the state level, whack it. And it pops up at the county level, whack it. It's always popping up at the federal level. So we've been about an hour, so
I'm gonna have to
jump off now, but I definitely want to talk to you offline about a special prank that I think you're just the guy to do.
All right. You know, I'm all about, you know, but I got to build house. When we come back, I promised Donna, man, it's a house of building, but in the process, I just know what, so we're prepping now, getting all our minds set around and all the artistry and the video, you know, and our activism and the resources that we have towards this, because I know I'm back and the thing that I really want is just to be left alone. But it's always Arizona, man. I mean, do you got to get a feeling that Arizona is always, it's like you have a 2x4 with 50 nails in it and you start pulling the nail out and, well, here comes the federal hammer. You got to pound it back in. So that's how I feel, you know, what they're doing with Arizona. Well, go ahead and hold on and we'll yak it before you go. All right. Thanks guys for listening. Tom, Jenny, we're going to have some fun and it's going to be a thing. And I know at least Tom, he knows. Philosophically, a lot of times he knows who the bad guys are, and we're going to find out and share. Peace.